Confidential news, and we can't talk about it.
Yes.
In which case, we'll shift straight away to talk about your nice new haircut,
Yeah.
which I think it looks really good. So well done, whoever the hairdresser. I presume it wasn't Holly.
No, it was Robert from the Victorian Barbers down the road.
Good, good. It looks a pro job. I mean, you can tell when you've done. I mean, so a lot. I think all of us are getting better at it. But you can obviously tell when someone's actually got some skill and is a professional at doing the haircuts. Very, very clear these days.
Did you actually you were threatening to do a rush job on your own haircut the other day. Did you do it? Because it
I
looked fun.
I didn't do it. I've since cut it, and it's been a disaster. I should have rush cut it. Just like just buzzed it off. But I actually spent a bit more time, and that didn't help. So the lesson of self-administered haircuts is just to go and do it. Don't take care about it. Doesn't work. Okay. Anyway, we are live, everyone. So welcome everybody to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 83, bringing it to you every Friday. We're going to be talking about all kinds of amazing recruiting content, part of the recruiting Brain Food community. So thank you all for joining. As we begin every single week, we always start off with a bit of a sound check. So we're multicasting on this. So if you're on Crowdcast and you can hear me okay, please say you can. I think you can. Lindsay's already said you can. But please give me a quick thumbs up on the chat stream on Crowdcast to confirm you can hear me okay. We are also live streaming on LinkedIn Live, which got 2,000 views last week. Oh my goodness. Been about 6 months since we hit into the thousands. So really pleased about that. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, just give me a quick comment, quick like, or thumbs up, or whatever those new emojis are. It'd be cool to see that. And on Facebook Live, if you're in the group and watching this there, again, just give me a quick thumbs up and let me know you can hear me okay. I think, yeah, we're getting a few thumbs up there. That looks okay. That looks okay. Even got a tweet out from on Periscope, even better. Okay, that's amazing. Thank you, everyone. I think we're ready to go. Let's get on with the show. We are talking nurturing online relationships today, which is something we all got to care about. Because guess what? The only relationships we're ever getting are online. And we've got some amazing guests with us today to talk about that. We've got Alan Bailey from Intel, who I think, you know, from a corporate context, has really pioneered a lot of super interesting work in terms of how you communicate and build relationships with people in long form. We've got my old friend Rosie Sherry. Hi, Rosie. I see you in your chat stream. I've known Rosie for ages, but she's been amazing at building communities. And she's actually unique in my view because she's built communities in different disciplines outside of her core expertise, which I've not seen anybody do. Like I'm able to build communities myself, but only in the recruiting and HR space. But Rosie has actually poured in different type of disciplines and been able to set up communities there. Amazing. And we've got Vanessa Rath as well, who's going to join us. She's an operating recruiter still, so still doing the job, but has done an amazing job of supporting existing communities whilst also building her own. So I think three ladies with great angles on how to do it. And we've even got Adam Gordon, who, you know, considers himself the global expert on nurturing online communities. How are you doing, Adam? Good to see you back in the saddle. Excited about the show. It's going to be good.
Yes, absolutely. A subject that I love very much. And you know, I shared on you posted it on LinkedIn that we were going to be talking about this, and I went and looked out my 30-point plan for virtual communities and shared it in the chat on LinkedIn, and I worked out that it was 2010 that I initially wrote that.
Seriously?
2010. We were building LinkedIn groups for BDO, Grant Thornton, EY, KPMG, and some law firms, all about how to be better at your job.
So you do actually know something about this, don't you? I mean, I kind of, you know, I just thought, yeah, he's just trying to flog candidate ideas or something. But you've actually
No, it's
got
nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with candidate ID. I own about six groups on LinkedIn with more than 5,000 members. I own a group called Strategic Sales on LinkedIn with about 20,000 members.
Yeah, so you basically used to do this professionally, didn't you? Like in your prior incarnation, you had a consultancy which you were supporting corporate businesses and how you build a community. So Okay, so you're going to be host as well as an expert. This is a thrilling, thrilling prospect. Anyway,
that's never happened before.
Never. unprecedented situation. Okay, before we let's kick off. Let's sort of think about what happened last week. Recruiting Brain for the newsletter. Did you read it? What was interesting? Give me three things.
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed the article about emojis.
Right.
It effectively said, right, emojis are. They can achieve all of this. They can help, you know, people feel a different way, things like that. But then it really very much concluded there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that emojis help to generate engagement in any way at all. Or, sorry, there's no evidence linking them to a call to action, improvements in call to action.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. It was basically, it turned out to be negative, didn't it? Basically, folks, I've just shared it in the chat stream there. The post was from Search Engine Land, and they were basically trying to figure out whether if you put an emoji into your subject line, does it help you get some action? Answer is no. It actually gives you negatives, a negative on open rate, negative on responses, I believe. So don't do that. But anyway, they published a large kind of blog post about it. I thought it was super interesting. I'm always interested in organizations that have this type of resourcing where they can literally track hundreds of thousands, if not millions of data points, and then be able to come back to us and say, yeah, this doesn't work. Because super interesting. I love emojis, and we can see that a lot of folks here do love emojis as well. So keep using them, but use them strategically. Don't throw them into a subject line. Doesn't work. Okay, what else, man?
So I really liked the article about, I think is it the Plain English Institute or something?
Yeah.
Writing in plain English. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, that was blaspheming. Oh, my goodness. We write so badly in recruitment. Like, we write so badly. You must have previous experience, or the ideal applicant must have previous experience in management accounting. Well, there's no, all experience is previous. Get rid of the word previous. You must have experience in. And the ideal applicant, just you talk to the person. You don't say the ideal applicant, you say you. Talk to the individual. Really, really great. Loads of simple tips in there, such as, you know, use short sentences. Use lists in a brief. Sentences of like three clauses. Stop doing it. Yeah. We absolutely have to simplify.
There's almost never an excuse for a comma. Like if it's a comma, that's a full stop. Put a full stop in it. And think about starting a new line if it's that way. You know what? This post, I've just shared it there. plainenglish.co.uk. When you're writing about writing, you've got such a high standard. The post itself had better be good. you guys say, hey, this is about good writing, and it's like the worst post ever. But it was a really interesting read. There's no razzle-dazzle about it. There's not a single picture. There's not a single video. It's just pure text. And he's using some sort of, you know, pre-WordPress type technology. So really old school stuff. However, the writing is excellent and the advice is top-notch. Everyone can afford to get better at writing, particularly as we're now working all remote and everyone's recognizing that actually written communication is super important in this context, much more so now that we don't have the across the desk type of experience of exchanging information. So let's get better at writing. It's going to make your lives better, make everyone's lives better. Share the link in the chat stream right there. So check it out. Okay, one more, man.
Can I just add one other thing to that? You know, I give one really simple example, like you must have previous experience. The word previous is completely superfluous.
Right.
Superfluous words are such a waste of your time and the reader's time.
Yep.
There's another one that is, you must have excellent written and verbal communication skills, right? Why not just, you must have excellent communication skills?
Yep.
You must have excellent written and verbal communication skills. Now, deliberate mistake in there. Why verbal? Written is verbal. It means oral. If you're ever going to say that, it's written and oral, not written and verbal. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
something I got taught.
It's one of those ways, you probably learn this in English Lit, don't you? But for some reason, we've become more florid in corporate communication. Like, I think corporate communication can sometimes lend itself to be more florid and more jargon intensive, kind of almost demonstrate your intelligence, so to speak. And it really doesn't help you communicate the things that you want to communicate, especially when you're writing to encourage people, to attracting people to jobs. I mean, we've had Mitch Sullivan on here before. We've had Katrina Kibben on before, people who, you know, coaching companies and how to do this. And yeah, we need to get better at it. No doubt. We are polluting the internet with bad writing, folks.
Yeah, I learned a lot of it working in advertising from a guy called Alistair Blair, who's a bit of a legend of recruitment advertising. And I thought I was a good writer. And yeah, I mean, he schooled me in quite a lot of things that just don't do this, don't do that. More space in adverts, less words to say the same thing. If you can say something in 5 words instead of 12, say it in 5.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely important. Okay, final thing, man.
Right, the recruitment trends that have emerged and are here to stay as a result of COVID. Guy called Gregory, a LinkedIn article.
The LinkedIn one, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a general, it's not a LinkedIn, like, it's a general LinkedIn blog written by a guy called Gregory somebody.
Okay.
Who works for LinkedIn, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the predictions, absolutely correct. So I've written them down. Recruiting teams are going to hire less. They're going to take more responsibility for the build and borrow. And I think that's absolutely correct. As companies need more flexibility around the size of their fixed term workforce, I think taking more responsibility for build and borrow and being involved in the conversations at that kind of workforce planning level. The second one was around the recruitment team having the overall accountability for how diverse or otherwise the organization is. Again, as recruitment teams start to become more responsible for or certainly influencing internal mobility and what does the internal pipelines look like, I think that's probably true. Virtual recruiting is going nowhere. Entirely agree with this. And in fact, as a community, recruiters could probably help to lead this around, we don't need to be in front of people to recruit them. We definitely, like in the same room, we definitely don't. So we should be leading with example in this, I think, to help the world move forward. So that links to the transition to remote working. A big change in employer branding. So the shift towards empathy and actions. And recruiter skill set's going to change.
That's a really interesting final point. Recruiter competency profile, we should do a show on that. Basically, if everything is changing the way which we think is going to change, do we really need to change the types of people that we recruit into recruiting? Because we've obviously evolved our industry to focus on the end game of hiring full-time on-premise employees. I mean, that's essentially the main reason why people are sitting in recruitment departments right now. And if that is no longer the end game, that's not the image, what kind of skills do we need to be looking for when we're hiring for our teams? Is it different? I would say massively different. Far less. Yeah, go on.
Revolut certainly thinks so. I'm not sure if you saw their job advert for head of recruitment operations, which is an entirely data science job.
Yeah, absolutely. It caused some controversy as well. Revolut consistently caused controversy, so I give them credit for that. I do. It's like, hey, this is us. You know, if you don't like it, stuff you. And I've got to give credit to companies that are like that. I mean, you may disagree with it, but the way to deal with that is not working there. But they're a successful business. They're trucking on and doing great, I think. And they're very in your face in terms of this is how we run things. And you know what? I think that's ultimately what people are looking for. Like, don't hide who you are. Don't try and say one thing and then actually be another. If you can front it up, then you should be attracting the people that are happy with that sort of happy with that environment. You might recall, actually, Coinbase very famously about a month ago kind of announced their internal policy, and they said, hey, listen, we're going to be focused on making profit. This is the manifesto. This is the primary thing. yes, you can care about this, 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 and this, but it cannot interfere with the primary objective of the business, which is that if you don't like it, here's some money, you can leave. And he actually paid like a golden handshake for people to leave, of which I think 5% of the employee population did. Now, he came with a lot of criticism for that. And he was like, oh, no, you know, you need to be caring about all this. But his position was, you know what? My job is to care about the company. And whilst outside of the company, he can try and help in his other ways. What he can't do is kind of use his company purely as a forum for pushing social types of change. It's like, look, I get it. This is something we all need to care about. But at the same time, we set up this business to do this. We cannot just pivot away from it. So I thought, you know what, agree or not with that policy. And a lot of people do have an issue with that and say, look, you can't stay out of this conversation. You have to be in it. At least he's being honest. It's like he's fronting it up. You know. So if you join Coinbase now, you know the score. And you cannot sort of go in there and subsequently complain. So anyway, very interesting how all that span out. We should again talk about that later. But anyway, let's get these guests on the show and let's see whether we can get some brains to help us with this. Oh, by the way, I totally forgot to mention, we need to thank our sponsors, by the way. This week's Brain Food Live is sponsored by our friends at Workable. Workable are our next gen ATS folks. If you are interested in any way of getting a better improvement on how you manage your recruiting process, you need to check out Workable, free 14-day trial right there shared in the link. Okay, let's get on with it. Shall we get on, Alan? Go on.
While Hung is bringing our guests on, could I just encourage everybody who's on Crowdcast anyway to vote in the poll. So down at the bottom of your screen, it says ask a question, and then next to that's polls. And the question is, what's the best online platform for community? Because I'm very, very interested to know what people think.
Yeah, and just to support that comment from Adam, if anybody has any questions for us, which you probably don't because, you know we know nothing, but you have any questions for our amazing guests, ask a question at the bottom of the screen, and that's where you get it. There we see Alan. Alan, how are you doing? Oh, everyone's on board. Amazing. Let's just go around. Alan Bailey, good to see you. Can you hear us okay, Alan? I don't think she can she?
No,
she can't. I wonder whether someone can give her a quick message. But I think Vanessa can hear us. Is that right?
How's it going? Good to see you guys.
Great. Okay, Vanessa, can you quickly introduce yourself, like who you are and what do you do?
Sure. So my name is Vanessa Roth. I'm actually joining you from Johannesburg in South Africa today. So what I do is, Hung was sort of right when he said I still work as a recruiter, but I'm actually much more in the sourcing space. I'm a freelance sourcer and also a global sourcing trainer, which was one of the silver linings of the pandemic. So that's pretty much it. And as you can see from the fan being on, it's really hot here today.
Yeah, well, you're coming out of the window there, aren't you? So amazing.
It's coming up to summer, yeah.
Oh, and Rosie, for the people who don't know you, great to see you, by the way. It's been a long time. You look great. You haven't changed, actually. I think the last time we had, like, at least 4 years ago. For the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, like, who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, I guess I call myself a community builder. I like building communities. Previously, I built up Ministry of Testing from scratch, kind of like bootstrapping. I left that a couple of years ago, and I'm now leading the community at Indie Hackers, and that's a community of kind of self-funded founders, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, amazing community. I think I might actually be a dormant member of Indie Hackers in some way. Back in my days when I thought I would actually be able to create things on my own, which I realized, no, you can't. Great community. Alan, can you hear us okay now? No, she cannot hear us. Okay, well, that's fine. We'll get Alan back in some other way. I think it's just a headphones thing. But let's get on with it whilst we support Alan with that. Let's talk about community and in particular nurturing online relationships. Because as we've moved to this type of situation where, we're looking at recruiting people that are reluctant to initially jump in to our sort of new jobs and all the rest of it, we might need to have longer and extended conversations with people rather than just immediately think, right, you know, we can pipeline this person in 2 weeks and get them a job. No, you might actually just be starting a conversation that is going to end up being like a several months, maybe even a couple of years relationship before they're able and comfortable to do that. So what is the rule number one for nurturing that relationship? Let's go to you with this one first, Rosie.
I don't know about recruitment, but I have a saying these days is study your people. So basically the theory behind that is if you get to know your people, then you can like maintain better relationships with them. You know what to talk with them about, you know the things that they're interested in. So you have to kind of like find ways to get to know them, whether that's like on an industry level, specific thing, or more on a personal level. And I guess there's a lot of tactics that you could use, but generally I kind of try to keep in touch with people, you know, follow them on Twitter, LinkedIn, their blogs, if they have a blog, and just like, you know, not forget about them until, you know, until I need them. It's like, you know, build that relationship so that there's that trust when something does come up.
You mentioned two really interesting points there, Rosie, and I just want to repeat them for the crowd here. Number one, like these people are all leaving a digital exhaust everywhere. You have the opportunity to actually understand a little bit more about themselves in these other spaces. Let's put it this way. If they've got a blog or they've got a channel somewhere themselves, you can bet your bottom dollar that they're going to be super interested and passionate in that thing that they're talking about. So straight away, you've got something that you can vibe with this person with because they're doing it on their own accord. So number one is not just see them as the person that's in your community or whatever it is that you want to do. There's a 3D person and they're fully dimensional. Go and check out some of the other things. The second thing you mentioned, Rosie, is your first connection should not be with like an immediate agenda, right? It's like if you come in and say, right, I need you to do this for me, it's like that's not going to happen. You need to have an understanding that, you know what, you got to build a relationship first and then figure out, you know, all these other things, that good things that might happen, you know, later on once the relationship is a little bit more solid. Good
generosity
stuff.
Generosity is the currency of engagement.
Right. Yeah. So where did you read that, Adam? You didn't certainly come up with it yourself, did you?
I got it from my colleague Scott McRae, quite honestly.
He definitely didn't come up with it either.
He said it in a meeting yesterday, and he's absolutely correct.
Yeah, that's very interesting though. It's like it's almost like, I don't know whether anybody's read the book by Marcel Mauss, The Gift. You probably haven't because you're not anthropology geeks, but it was one of the very first anthropological terms out there. This guy basically studied gift-giving cultures that didn't have like a monetary system of exchange. It seemed to be, instead of, you know, our society where, you know, we're trying to accumulate stuff, their society were giving stuff away. It's like it's a bad thing to have stuff. You have to give it away. And it looked bizarre and weird for us. But he calculated that actually what they were doing was by giving something, they were accruing what we now call social capital. By giving something to this person, usually food or whatever it was, that person was actually building social capital in the invisible side. We can call it generosity, we can call it whatever, but they were accruing that. And once you have a lot of social capital, you can either bank it or you can spend it. You can call in on the favors and all the rest of it. So
it's also described as leading with value.
Yeah, I guess so. You got to stick to your principles. But it's interesting. Let's talk about values a bit later, because I think that's a very key part of community as well. Like you've got to have some steam behind it. Let's go to you, Vanessa, on this. I think you're very similar to me in the sense that we're probably not like pro community builders in any way. But we've kind of managed to do it. You know, more by luck than judgment, let's say. So I wanted to see sort of what you've learned, both through your support of some of these communities that you've become prominent in having supported them, and also building your own community? Like, what's the couple of lessons that you can share with us on that?
So my story pretty much is that I discovered this wonderful world of sourcing, and I had no one to learn from on my continent, literally. In Africa, there was no one who was sourcing. I had to start looking further afield to learn from people. And that's what I did, is I tapped into the global sourcing community. And I started talking to people like Katrina Collier, you know, chatting to Shannon Pritchard, Balash, all of those people, to learn how to source and asking them the right questions as to how do I do this. And what I was just amazed at is these people didn't know me from a bar of soap, but they were so willing to assist me and so willing to share. So kind of I took that same kind of feeling after going to my first sourcing event in Budapest 2 years ago, and I wanted to bring that back into a South African context. I've set up a sourcing community here in South Africa where 2 years ago sourcing wasn't a thing. Now we've got a really strong Facebook group, 1,100 people on there. I mean, yeah, 1,100 people at the last count, where we discuss sourcing, where people will say, I need help with this, or I just discovered this, how can you assist me? And I think that the art of running that community is just to be consistent. And that's actually something I learned from you, Hung, was that, you know, your brain food comes out every Sunday morning, but being consistent and feeding a community is going to give you, you know, kind of that kudos that you need when building any community. And that's how, as you say, we're not pros at this. We literally just fell into it. And I think it was by being consistent.
Consistent in terms of like sending stuff in, or consistent in your behavior? Can you unpack that a little?
Everything, to be honest. So, I mean, like you, I know every morning, Sunday morning, I'm going to get my recruiting brain food email. Every morning at 6 o'clock on the group, I will post something about sourcing. So when people wake up, they get into the office, they know, and at 6 o'clock, there was a post, even to the point that if I don't post something at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'll get like a sarky comment from someone saying, oh, are you in the bush again? Or what are you doing? Where was the post this morning? I had nothing to read when I got into the office. And I think that's what people want. And another great thing I wanted to share, and I loved what Rosie had to say about this, and this is something that I learned from Craig Fisher in the US, is that to give for free 5 times, and then ask. And that's kind of the algorithm that he works on, is that give away 5 things for free, or 5 bits of assistance, or share 5 times, and then have an ask. And I think that that's where a lot of people in the sourcing and the recruiting kind of fraternity, like how they go wrong, is that it's always just posting adverts. And it's not like giving back and nurturing a network at all. It's just irritating.
You know what?
Craig Fisher, 5-to-1 ratio based
yes,
on
yes, something, yeah, Craig's his, fast, yeah.
Yeah, was it based on his recommendation from data or from what he thinks? Because you could easily...
To be honest with you, I couldn't answer that.
I can answer that, yeah. Because he was really early on in doing this, and there's no way he did it on data alone in terms of a forensic analysis of it. But he was a very prominent distributor of information in the recruiting space, really in the early noughties, sort of in the mid sort of to late noughties and then the early tens. And he built his own profile, got his own community together, built his own events. And I think it was just a rule of thumb that he's carried through. Alan, I'm going to try and invite you back in. Let's see whether we can get that on. So mentioned a really important point in terms of this cadence, this regularity and consistency. And I wonder whether, hey, Alan, can you hear us? I don't think she can. That's okay. Shame. It's a real shame. The line looks really solid for some reason, but the audio is not working for Alan. Okay. I want to just talk about this idea of like sending a regular bit of messaging or content to the community. What are your thoughts on that? And Adam, I'd love to get your views as well as Rosie's on this, because you've got experience of doing exactly this. How important is it to be regular?
Sorry, was that directed at me again or Rosie?
Oh, no. Okay. I was going to say either Rosie or Adam, but Adam's distracted typing at somebody. So let's go ask Rosie this question.
We can hear Alan typing, so there's definitely some sound coming through.
Oh, shame.
Why can't Alan hear us? It's so weird.
We can hear you, Alan. So in terms of how important is it to be regular? If you turn up to a community, a Slack group or a Facebook group or whatever, and there's nothing new on there, you're possibly never going to come back. So there are certain, there are definitely, for any type of community, there are definitely metrics that you will need to learn in order to understand what's going to achieve the optimum engagement. Too many new posts every day, people just go, that's a mess, too much stuff, don't have time for that. Not enough new posts every day, people are going to go, not vibrant enough, not enough people here are going to be participating in that. So there, you will learn over time what is the optimum number of new posts, what's the optimum number of people that need to like or comment on a post for it to actually take off and generate some traction. The amount of debate that needs to happen, so the amount of maybe sort of like challenging type of posts and things like that. And so building up a knowledge of what are the right metrics is something that's important. And it's something that you've done very well with BrainFood.
Is that actually a universal set of rules here? Or is it like, it's very context driven in terms of the type of community it is and stuff like that?
This is why I asked Vanessa about Craig's 5-to-1 ratio, because it could easily be 2-to-1 or it might be 10-to-1. And it depends on the weight of what it is you're offering versus what you're trying to ask for. So if you're asking for something massive, you probably need 5-to-1 or maybe 10-to-1. If you're asking for something that's pretty light, such as click like on this or do something like that, it could be 3-to-1. It could be something different.
All right. So I'll tell you what, one thing I want to introduce here is this concept of energy in, energy out, right? In the sense that, like, how much are you asking? This is energy back. Like, if you're asking your community to fill out a 30-minute survey or something, or if you're asking your community to, please sign up to my whatever it is you've got, or even pay me whatever, you know, a subscription or whatnot, that's a big ask. In which case, you have to provide a lot of value in excess of what you're getting back before you even go there. And a critical mistake, I think, and Rosie, I'm not sure whether you get this in other places, but in the recruiting world, we definitely get this. Recruiters ask too early and we ask too much, having given very little at all. And that is that's why people
don't like. Let's get married. I've just met you on match.com. Let's get married. That's what recruiters do.
It's not even that. It's like, let's get married and you pay for it. It's like, there's no give. And there's no, you know, you haven't built the relationship to even ask that question. And then the worst thing is we then just hop off and move on. It's like, okay, fine, fair enough, see you later. And then go to the next person and ask them. And it's like, okay, this is the reason why, you know, the rep of recruiters on the floor and has been there for a long time. We can't seem to raise ourselves away from that. It's something that we've got to think about. Energy in, energy out. Rosa, let's go to you with this. We've talked like quite forensically on this, but are we being too scientific with, oh, it needs to be, you know, 5 in, 2 out? I mean, is there more of a like an art to all of this, or can you break it down to numbers?
Yeah, I mean, I would call it more of an art. I think if you get too specific, it's like, you know, you're focusing on the wrong things. It's like, you know, data can help sometimes, but at the end of the day, you kind of have to think about the people you're serving. I think, like, you know, going back to like the consistency thing, I think in like communities, quite often we refer to rituals, like, you know, these are the things, you know, they're rituals, people, you know, these are things we do, this is when we do them. So that, you know, that's kind of a similar philosophy of what you're all talking about. And I'd also say that like rituals and consistency is probably like a form of marketing as well. So instead of like always feeling obliged to like email out stuff or tweet stuff out, if you have consistency in what you do, people know that to show up and when to show up. You don't always have to tell them. But by having that consistency, it's like that, you know.
I totally get what you're saying.
Makes the whole jigsaw so much easier to keep together and to stick together.
Rosie, I think I know what you're saying, but I wonder whether you could like give us an example to illustrate this idea of if you create like a ritual at a particular moment and then people show up without you prompting them, because that sounds like a very powerful thing to achieve and beneficial, because you're not having to hammer people with emails and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's like one thing we've done like with Ministry of Testing is like we did a lot of meetups, and like people would just like self-organize their meetups, but it was up to them to do it, right? But there was always ways that they would go about doing them, and they would develop their own ritual, or, you know, their own schedule for themselves. But, you know, and maybe like another example is that we did events, and like at the end of every event, we did like 99 second talks where everyone could get up.
Oh, we've lost
seconds to speak about anything. And that became like a real ritual at the event, and it became something that people like aspired to do, that like people who like totally like freaked out with public speaking would like pluck up the courage to get on there for 99 seconds because that was like feasible, and it became, you know, it became like a real talking point.
Let me just stop you there. I love that idea. Isn't that a brilliant idea?
Yeah, excellent.
Brilliant.
Because it gets everyone involved. And by the way, for folks who don't know, Rosie comes from a testing background, and she basically ran the Ministry of Testing, which is full of testing folks. And, you know, without being like an essentialist in terms of discipline, but probably in the testing arena, you're going to get a lot of people that aren't necessarily that fluent with things like public speaking and stuff of that type. You know, a lot of introverted characters in there, different types of mental makeups. And it's a huge struggle sometimes to get up and do stuff of this type. But you create like a very simple ritual, make it very easy, make it a bit fun. 99 is like a fun number, isn't it? Because it's, you know what I mean? And then everyone gives it a go and it's like, yeah, boom, we're an icebreaker, you know?
That's and a Facebook group. That's a Brain Food Facebook group opportunity, by the way.
It's happening. Rosie, I'm here by stealing that idea. You realize, part of your condition of coming on to Brain Food Live is that, you know, you wave away all your rights to your ideas. But I think it's brilliant because we all have, I tell you what some people think in community, they're really disappointed at what they call lurkers, which I hate that term because I think it's totally all right not to contribute, right? It's totally okay to be there and just observe. I have no problem. So I don't want to use the term lurker, but I've used it, so I'm going to roll with it. But it's one of those things where you might be able to activate a few people that might perhaps naturally be on the sidelines. But once they've gone and done it, it's like suddenly it's a safer, their safe space expands, if you like. And they're able to interact and more fully get involved and maybe get more joy out of it. So yeah, I wonder, let's talk about that. Like, is it a concern to have people that lurk and don't quote unquote contribute?
I'm not concerned personally. I think everyone's different and you have to respect that. And everyone's at a different point in their journey. And I think where people go wrong with communities is trying to expect everyone to participate. Mm. But instead, they should be designing their activities for the lurkers because they're the majority.
Mm.
I learned, now this might have changed, but I learned from building quite large LinkedIn groups back in 2009, 10, 11, that around about 1 in 10 LinkedIn group members will contribute to discussions, and about 1 in 10 of those, so 1 in 100, will actually post their own discussions or initiate their own discussions. So it's a very, very low number, and they're the people that are worth nurturing in a slightly different way.
That's interesting. Say something more about that, Adam.
Well, I mean, I think the one-to-one relationship with those people that are conversation starters, and maybe something a little bit special for those people that are conversation contributors.
Right.
Because I learned that if you are able to introduce people to each other, either offline or like kind of video type environment or something like that, they're far more likely to then continue to contribute and communicate with each other using your community. And one other one is, as soon as one person has contributed to a discussion, it's 8 times more likely that they will continue to contribute to discussions. Mm. So once they've done it once, so if you at somebody on a LinkedIn post or a Facebook post or you know, something like that in a discussion, it's more like that. That's going to get them to participate more likely, and then they're 8 times more likely to continue to contribute to discussion within that community. Because once you've spoken once, your duck's broken. You're going to keep. I don't know if that's a term. It's a cricket term, isn't it? So you're going to keep contributing.
You know, that's super interesting. I fess up, I don't do any of this. So the folks who are on my Facebook group there, 3,000 odd people, I'm sorry I failed to give like differentiated experience to the super posters there. You know, I was like, yeah, whatever. So do I correct that? Let me know. I mean, maybe I should give you a beer or something. I don't know.
I do. What Chad and Cheese do. That's exactly what Chad and Cheese do. They send beer to people.
I do like the idea of providing a little bit of concierge to people that are positive contributors, though. Even though that has kind of like you're kind of moving into elitism a little bit, and you wonder, you know, is that the right thing? I don't know. Thoughts on this?
It's not elitism. It's they lean in, you lean in.
I want to chime in here, guys, because what I used to do in that SourceCon South Africa group, hold on, was, you know how you get your stats and you get your top performers for the month and Facebook sends it to you? I used to post those every month, and I'd have it like a competition and say, okay, so our top contributor this month was so-and-so and you win such and such. But what was happening was that the same 10 names out of a group at that stage was maybe 700 or 800 were just shuffling positions in the top 10.
Yep.
And for me, it was kind of like it was only those people. It was only focused on them. And as soon as I stopped doing that, more people felt more engaging. They contributed more. There were more comments, those things. So I don't think it's always good to highlight it in that once a month post, because then a lot of people don't want to be on that list. Well, I don't know. It was a weird thing to learn when running a community.
Yeah. I think it had become your elite.
Yes, and that's exactly what's happening. Exactly. And the top 10 were so competitive and they were like, but they were started to post things and contribute. And the comments were just like, that's not a great comment. You're just trying to get points here. Yeah. You're just being a fool.
Let me just summarize this real quick. Basically, if you create a competition, guess what? People are going to game it. You've got to be careful about that. Like, how do you do it in such a way that is conducive to the community rather than this system? I mean, the Brentford Hall of Fame is kind of my attempt not to game it, but kind of game it. And the reason why I created a bubble chart rather than a table is because it made it harder for people to actually consistently be on a ranking system this way. But even then, I'm not sure it's entirely possible or feasible to do. Rosie, let's go to you with this. We're talking about how do we – is it right thing to do to differentiate your personal like treatment for super contributors, so to speak, or is it a good thing for the community? Are those two things separate?
I think it's a good thing. It's much like I would see it as like the whole diversity movement at the moment. Black Lives Matter. It's like we can give minorities or different quiet people, different people, more attention than other people. There's nothing wrong with it. At all. As an example of something that I'm doing at the moment, like Indie Hackers, it's a custom built website and community. But as a woman in tech and a woman in business, you know, I care about having more women there, but it's still very much kind of male dominated. And I've tried to get women to participate, but it's like really hard. A lot of them are like really reluctant. But they've been quite happy to show up at little like meetups, and then off the back of that, I set up a Slack. It was all kind of just like on the spur of the moment, going with the flow kind of thing. So now we have a Slack, and we're running some like women-focused events. But the idea about that is that I'm getting to know them, and then I'll pull them like into the main community as and when I can.
Rosie, this is really interesting, and we've kind of gone to a place which I do want to investigate, which is there's all kinds of diversities, but let's focus on genders. We're talking about this right now. I'm experiencing this in the group. Basically, it is definitely male dominant in terms of posting and activity. I don't have the numbers in a forensic way, but I would say at least seven posts out of 10, maybe from a bloke, basically. And you know, I don't criticize the blokes, usually the posts are good, but I'm always wondering why is that the case when actually there's like 55% of the group is female, but they're posting less. So you're saying, Rosie, actually you've encountered it in your group, and what you've done is actually create a side channel, if you like, a side group where perhaps we can create another space where people could feel more comfortable. You get to know them a bit better, and then as their confidence grows, you can kind of encourage them to contribute more to the wider group.
Yeah, definitely. And it works slowly, but surely it does work. And I then use my powers to promote them as much as possible.
So right.
I run the Twitter for indie hackers, and then like if they share about their projects, and I'll go and tweet about them just to like lift them up and stuff. So it's like, you know, it's not just about what happens in the Slack, but it's also about supporting them. When I know women won't ask to be supported, I know they won't ask it, but men will. They often like nudge me, say, hey, can you tweet this? Can you do that? But with women, they don't, they never ask. So it's like, you know, I don't know the science behind it. I just go like with my gut feel of what I feel is right.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've had a tough time as a woman in business, a woman in tech. And so, you know, hell yeah, I'm going to support women because we need it. We deserve it.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Van, let's go to you, because I'm a member of your group, which is marvelous. But I actually find a lot that maybe since my impressionism, or maybe it's because you're the leader of it, but I feel like there's like quite a lot of active female contributors in there. Is that your read, or do you have the same issue a little bit as I do?
No, to be honest with you, is we are predominantly female because of the recruitment industry in South Africa is predominantly female, and that's reflected in our group, to be honest. But just to touch on that diversity, I've just finished an awesome week emceeing and presenting at the Global Sourcing Summit with Phil Tusing and the gang. It's been fantastic. It's really been a great week. But I was actually chatting to two other females who I did a lot of work with during the week, saying that the sourcing community is becoming very male dominated. You know, all of the people who were presenting and speaking, especially on the more technical side of the sourcing spectrum, you know, the ones who were going into like the coding side of things, scraping, were all males. And we were like, why aren't the females stepping up to go into more of these technical talks and to present along these lines? And it's definitely something that we were thinking about, that for the next sourcing summit, we need some to get some females in the room and to start, you know, increase the female skills to become more technical, because at the moment it's far too male dominated for my liking.
Yeah, very interesting.
That's really interesting, because if you look at if you look at hiring for jobs like sales and marketing and HR and those jobs that you would consider to be quite kind of right brain jobs, there's no gender diversity issue in there.
No,
hiring in
HR is massively dominant to women. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but there's no diversity problem though. I mean, it's not considered an issue, is it?
In the specialized sourcing space, I would
all
say.
Right. Well, continue, Adam.
I never see any companies with a major diversity initiative, which is we need more men in HR.
Oh, I think we do. We absolutely do.
It's not an active campaign that I've ever seen.
It's not a campaign.
No, I agree.
Active.
All right, I get this. My point is
there is lots and lots of active focus on creating more gender diversity in more technical areas such as software engineering, data science, things like that. And if you look at the sourcing community and the kind of work that's involved in sourcing, it goes from very, very right-brained soft skills around telephone communication and, you know, generating empathy and things like that, through to how the hell do I hack that website to get tons of data out of it? And that is a much, much more technical thing. And those two things are not really the same kind of skill set. I'm not surprised what you're saying, Van.
Yeah, but to be honest with you, it also depends on the setup of the sourcer. You know, is the sourcer doing the reach out, or is this a sourcer who's the kind of the person who's in the dark room, you're just feeding them flat food and Coke and things like that, and a liquid Coke is what I'm talking about, and they just generating lists all the time. You know, it just depends on, you know, what is the personality. And a lot of the people, as I say, who presented, and yes, there were a lot of female presenters, but their topics were exactly what you're talking about, Adam, more empathetic, you know, being yourself, using humor in your outreach, et cetera, where all the heavy tech stuff, male dominated.
That's very interesting. I'd be keen to know and hear from anybody who attended SOSU, by the way. Great event, 3-day event of sourcing. I think there's loads
four-day event.
Is it 4 days? even too much. I'd be interested in your feedback as a delegate, because did you notice this gender division? I mean, it was there. I'm trusting Van, there's assessment there. Did you notice it as you were watching these talks? And, you know, was that problematic? And what would you like to see going forward? I'd love to see your views on that. Please make a comment. Let me know on this. Mm. Okay, we're talking about gender. We're going to stay on it because it's a topic that we need to keep going forward with. Let's talk about the idea of getting sort of more women involved in this public way. Now, we've got to balance it with this idea of, hey, listen, we need to respect individuals that don't want to participate in this fashion, want to observe, want to look. That's totally fine. But you don't want to be visibly overly male, particularly if you have an ambition to have more balance in the group. So Rosie had one idea was, hey, you create a separate side group and grow it there. Any other ideas on what we need to do? And Rosie, if you've got another one, feel free to chuck it in there.
One thing to do is to become an ally, I guess. Men become allies. Men can step mm-hmm. back. Men can choose not to participate if they see something that's wrong. If there's too many men speakers, they can choose to step down or point it out. They can choose to put demands, to say, well, what they can ask what the women are being paid and make sure that there's equal pay.
This though, Rosie, I just want to narrow the scope a little bit and move away from the events lens, but move further focus on the community side. So let's say, we've got like a group, 50-50 men, women, that kind of split, but we've got a disparity in terms of visible activity. How do we improve that balance? Is there anything we can do? You have a great idea already with the side group. Is there another technique, for instance, that you could share? And I open this to everyone, by the way. Let's throw this out there, including the people in the crowd. Be loving to get your views on how we do this, because I've got to confess, I'm not great at it myself.
I was going to say, start. The best thing that you can do is start by being aware of the problem and of your surroundings. There's really simple examples that happen a lot and constantly, and it really kind of pisses me off. But it happens a lot on Twitter or, maybe LinkedIn, but you get these tweets that go out that recommend all these amazing people, like the top of the game, or these people are like the best in community, the best developers or the best whatever. And they're all men every single time. And it's not that they mean it. It's just like these are the same names coming up time and time again. And it just like keeps escalating. It's like, if it's always going to be men are always going to be pushed to the top. And women are never going to be seen. So, it's like once you can become aware of it, you can start pointing it out to people. And I think like, at least from what I've seen, like people in my ecosystem have started pointing it out, and people are like, adding women's names at the end and say, or saying things like, oh, have you noticed that's an all male list that you got there? That's a good place to start.
You've mentioned a few really important points there. Number one, the visibility of it's a recognition that this is a little bit of a disparity, which some people may not know this, but you might need to underline it, I guess, in some way. And secondly, the promotion aspect. This links a little bit to you being the responsibility of the moderator. Like if you're seeing things, activity from a female, then go ahead and try and promote that. On my side as a moderator, what I don't necessarily do the male-female split as well as I could, but I do try and make sure that a first-time poster, I try and like what they're doing, even if I don't agree with the point. Or I think it's not the greatest question or whatever. I'm kind of give the first time poster a lot of slack because I'm thinking, they've just took the jump here. They probably feel a little bit uncomfortable. And I can't be there, hammering them for doing something, which probably is not the best thing you can do, et cetera. But you give them a bit of slack. because you want them to be comfortable to have this conversation. So, but maybe I should do that more with a gender lens, I guess, and pick it up from there. Adam, you're about to say something, I think, before I jumped in or not?
Yeah, I got a couple of points about this. I think that people should encourage less represented groups to participate. So, I mean, certainly on the certain LinkedIn groups and Facebook groups, where if somebody has said something to me, like in a private conversation or something like that, I will regularly say to them, "You should share that." Yeah. In that community, and I'll encourage them, you know, to go and do it. And if they have got any questions around what language to use or what the best way of doing it, or actually giving them some advice around why they would do that, because it'll be good for their profile or it'll be good for opportunities coming to them or something like that. Rosie's definitely right about all men need to understand this, that if you're getting invited to join a panel for something, and you can see that everybody else on that panel is a man, do the decent thing and step down. And hung, we do it, don't we? I mean, if we've got a week where it's going to be all guys who look like they're the guests, I always say, don't I? I'll step down for this. There's other people. Let's get a better representation on this group. And probably about one in every four times I'll do that.
Yeah, we're a bit handicapped because we're obviously a two-person show and we're both blokes. So it's the odds of being sort of more male-dominated are almost always there. But we are conscious of it because it's you know, we're losing perspective by purely having this. But and we can even go further. You look at our ethnicity, for instance, like super conscious of that. I mean, holy crap. You know, recruiting brain food in the group. It is 95% active users are going to be white. You know, that's like, okay, what do I do about that? I'm not sure. It's the damn truth. You know, I'm not sure there's the tooling to do anything about it. I've got one idea which I want to throw at you two in particular as active community kind of organizers and moderators, managers. What is your view on having a set day, like carving out space in the calendar to say for underrepresented groups? Is that a good idea, or is that like just putting again the spotlight on people in a very uncomfortable way? And you know, I hate to be the person, no, the random the token Chinese person, like I'm immediately rejecting that. And I'm kind of conscious of, you know, this, but is it a way to do that? Is that a bad idea? Thoughts on this?
I would say it's a bad idea, in all honesty, Hung. I think it's something that we need to be consciously doing all the time, you know, be aware of the minorities in our groups and work hard together as a community to kind of raise their profile. I think if you say, you know, the 15th of every month is, you know, Black Awareness Day or something like that, then it's too much. You know, you concentrate on one day of the month, and then what about the rest of the month? You know, for me, it's not a good idea. I just want to touch on one thing you were saying about, you know, the conferences and, you know, seeing the same type of people on panels and stuff. It's also up to the delegates to actually say, I'm not going to attend that conference because the lineup is absolutely a mirror image of myself. I want to go and learn from other people because I'm trying to improve the diversity stats within my own organization. And I think that is what doesn't happen enough.
I think there's a lot we can be done. We should just talk very quickly about the movement of virtual. Has that helped or not in terms of diversity, in terms of speaker lineup, panel lineup, and all the rest of it?
Absolutely. 100% Hung. And I'm so glad you asked that question. And that's been the silver lining of the pandemic for me. I mean, I've presented at conferences all over the world, which has just been amazing. Where previously, when people heard that you're in South Africa, they looked at the flights from South Africa, they looked at the accommodation costs. Now it's just like, it's not even a consideration. It's yes, Vanessa, let's get you on board. And for myself, it's been amazing. And for me to be able to take the South African story of how we work with diversity here to a greater audience has just been incredible.
Yeah, I think it's a big leveler, a big opportunity for events organizers, community organizers, all the rest of it. Okay, give me another idea, folks. How do we improve the diversity that's often associated with stimulating the shyer members of the group to get involved and stuff like this? Those two things actually may be linked. Any thoughts on techniques to do that?
So what I often get is I get people who will rather send me a DM with something and say, Vanessa, can you post this? And I always turn around and say, no, you need to post this yourself. So encourage people to stand up. You know, this is not the Vanessa Roth show, you know, but anything that you've got to say is of value. You post it. I'm going to approve it. I'm going to be the first person to comment on it. Go for it.
That is so important to understand that if you're trying to build a community, it can't be all about you.
Yeah,
if it's all 100%. About you, then that's a big problem. It needs to be maybe one in five things come from you, something like that. But there are certain groups, especially Facebook groups, where the diversity of the people that I don't mean diversity in terms of ethnicity or gender. I mean the volume of people that are posting is pretty broad. And then there's others where same one or two people every time. That's a problem for that group.
You know what, on this, I reckon it's the difference between like being a player and being a platform where other people play. And I think if you want to manage a community, at least my philosophy is that you cannot be a player. Because you've got to basically create the space for other people to talk. Your job is to basically make sure these conversations flow in a safe and, you know, a positive way, but you can't be stepping in too hard with your own opinions, even though you might have a strong opinion on this particular thing. You've almost got to pull back a little bit and say, you know, you can't just come in and dominate it because you do have all of these excess powers. You know, it's like you can block people. You can just delete comments. You can be one of those monster moderators. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't want to be that person. No. Rosie, let's go to you with this. You're a person that has moderated these groups. Do you agree with that assessment that the role of the moderator needs to be like consciously neutral, or do you think no, you're totally entitled to step in and be, you know, fully yourself as a member, just with additional responsibility?
I would say that, and I would say like kind of mindfulness, like, and like empathy, you know, just like being human towards people and, you know, trying to understand things from other people's perspectives is key. And like, you know, I guess one thing that I've done a lot is just like, I've always like tried to find the spark in people, like certain people like who step forward or who show a specific interest, or, you know, you can kind of like see a bit of a talent in them. And I've always liked giving people opportunities because I see something in them, and every time I do that, they're like, you know, they're like totally like, can't believe it. They're like, oh my God, why are you even thinking of me? Why are you even asking me? And it's like, you know, it's like, you know, like believing in people.
What do you mean opportunity, Rosie? Are you talking about within the group and giving them some shot to do something or what?
Yeah, you know, like one guy who's like a very good friend of mine now, for Ministry of Testing, when we started doing events, he didn't do like the first few events, but he became our main host for our events, and he became our go-to guy. He's a black guy, nice. Very friendly. And, you know, I just, you know, I could see that in him, but he couldn't see it himself. But I could say, this is like what the community needs. And so many people don't have that confidence to kind of stand up and apply for something. And it's also about, you know, I guess like, you know, going back a bit to diversity, is like sometimes people need these opportunities, but they also need to be paid for them. So I think there's big culture in communities that people who help build a community don't ever get paid. Whereas like when I was doing Ministry of Testing, I insisted that everyone who helped me out got paid, got like, you know, freelance, whatever it was, they had to get paid something. All the speakers got their expenses paid. Every speaker was like treated the same. So it's like trying to like even out the fairness of it all.
That's a really good example. We're running out of time, but I want to just finish one thing. Adam, yeah, I'm going to go to you in a sec. Talk to me about problem people in the group, folks. Because, you know, everyone has this. I think the number is, you know, maybe if you get to 100, you're going to get one person who is probably not, I mean, I'm not talking about the intentional spammer, because you can just like get that person out of there, no problem. I'm talking about someone who basically has, I don't know how to describe it, but lack of emotional intelligence, let's say, or, you know, their kind of ribaldry is going across the line or whatnot. like, how do you deal with this person? Because I've got to be honest, I'm not an expert at this. It's like, oh goodness, I suddenly have to try and, you know, police this behavior and be fair at the same time, and also recognize that certain people are simply going to be better at navigating some of these things than others. How do we deal with that? Thoughts?
Do you want to take this, Rosie?
I have a phrase that I like saying. It's one that I discovered recently, but I like to say, go by the philosophy of saying, we don't do that here. So if people are doing something in your space, you have every right to say to them, hey, we don't do that here. And then that leads to the question, is like, they can do it somewhere else, but you know, it's fine. You can do whatever you're doing somewhere else, but we don't do it here. And it's very hard for people to like respond in a very bad way to that. Sometimes they do, but
do you make that comment publicly, or do you make them? Do you make it bilaterally in private, Rosie?
It depends. I've done it privately. I've done it for people who have been a member of the community for years and who have actually been quite well known, and that was really tough. But I had to ban him in the end and just say, this is not how we do things. And that was hard because that was a business relationship as well. So I would say it had financial implications, but we don't do that here, right? If we allow this, then it puts our whole community and business at risk. So we can't, in my opinion, allow certain things.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is you've got to have a set of rules, and the breaching of those rules need to be policed. You can't give a prominent or a significant person extra, you know, rights to do that. And if they have breached the rules, you need to remind them of that rather than as a personality characteristic. You say, hey, listen, in this space, this is not something that we're going to allow. I need you to withdraw it, or I need you to remind yourself next time this happens. Boom. Okay. You got anything, Van, on this problem person?
Just, how you deal with it? Yeah, just quickly, Hang, just to say is that, you know, you've got to take a step back, and it depends who you let into the group. And I mean, I know that you kind of let people in and you assess, you know, are they in the space? And I think that really pays off, because I don't seem to see many issues in your group. I know there was a slight one maybe in the last day or two, but what I try to do is try and make sure that the people that are coming into the group aren't going to be those type of people. However, what I do is I go with the two strike system. So kind of like two strikes and you're out, to be honest. So what I do is one infringement, I'll contact them personally, have a chat with them. If they do it again, they're out. I don't need that negative energy in my group. So yeah, sorry right. for you.
Yeah, really good. Adam, you got one for us?
I think you do have to create rules, and you have to refer back to those rules, because I agree with Rosie's, you know, we don't do that here. But if you appear to be using that in a way that is designed to solve a specific problem or specific person or point of view or something like that, you could be seen to being discriminatory in some way. So it has to link to, I think it has to link to set rules that everybody knows and abides by. The other, we don't do that here, could create a diversity problem again around diversity of thinking, or like somebody saying something in a particular way, and we don't do that here is like a way of saying you can't talk about stuff in that way. So again, just linking it is a fine way of doing it, but if it links back to specific rules, then I think that keeps it all pretty a level playing field. One other really quick thing, Hung, you talked about, should the moderator be neutral? That entirely depends on the, I mean, again, Rosie talked about marketing. It's the marketing aspect of the group. If the part of the group is about the moderator's personality, then the moderator definitely should not be neutral. But if the moderator is irrelevant to the, is like, not irrelevant, is completely anonymous in terms of the brand of the community, then the moderator probably either has to be, probably has to be kind of neutral or completely, or in the background entirely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, on that final note, I'm a definite believer in the background side. Like you got to step away, and you know, you got to just stew in your own kind of, you know, ideas. You got no one to talk to, Hung. That's my kind of view of it. But that's what you got to do. You just got to sacrifice that part because other people are going to explore it, and that's fine. You know, it's much better that other people have that space to have dialogue.
I think you do it quite well, because if you look at the Brain Food newsletter, which really sets the tone for the whole community, one of the biggest bits of value from the Brain Food newsletter is your commentary on the Brain Food. And so you're not really controversial one way or the other, but you might give a bit of opinion, but it's mostly this is thought provoking because of this, and that's the way you take it into the group, and I think that's great.
Yeah, the newsletter is a different story. I'm just going to fire my opinion right in between your eyes. The Facebook group, though, hey, listen, I'm out of there. I'm just going to try and make assessments and make sure everyone's happy. All right, I think that's about it. We've got one question from Ushia. I think we can very quickly deal with this. Ushia said, thoughts on building recruitment-specific community on Reddit and or streaming platform like Twitch? Thoughts on this? Have everyone tried it? We talked about, actually, in the poll, where is the best platform for community? As this is kind of related to this, what about using something like Reddit or Twitch to set up a recruiting community? Anyone done that? I guess Van will go with you on this.
So, you know, if not, why not? I mean, go for it. You can open up these platforms anywhere. There is actually a strong subreddit about recruiter spam, how bad recruiters are, which is I can't think of the name off the top of my head, but really entertaining to watch and follow. You know, it's always, you don't get the recruiters being the sharpest and starting a subreddit, but you do get people using Reddit, which is, right, you know, predominantly tech focused, who are going to complain about the recruiters first, and then people will get there. So I don't know what offhand they probably are, but yeah, that one's a very entertaining one.
Yeah, I think Recruiting Hell, I think it's called. But hey, listen.
Yes, I think so.
If you're a recruiter and you want to set up a subreddit talking about recruiting, you're a very brave person, I would say, because you're heading into the lion's den right there. But no, why not? Let's give it a shot. I'd love to see a Twitch sort of angle on this as well, because that's an interesting thing to experiment with. All right. Anyway, listen, folks, we are out of time. So I just want to thank everyone for paying attention to us on this late Friday afternoon for us in GMT time, even later for you, Van. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Thank you, everyone, for watching Brain Food Live on Air. Thank you, Rose and Cherry. Great to see you, my dear. Hopefully we can connect again soon. Thank you, Vanessa Roth. Great to see you. And thank you, Alan Bailey. I'm really sorry that we weren't able to get you on, that you could hear us. Bizarrely, we could hear you. It was really a shame that we weren't able to fix it. But next time, we'll sort that out. Thanks, everyone, for joining the show. We'll be back next week. We have to talk about it. We're going to be talking reflections on the U.S. election. What is the impact on whatever that result is going to be on recruiting? And actually quite important, because of late, we've seen some kind of executive decisions made by the president that has changed things like the visa scenario, changed things like even diversity, and whether that's a positive thing that, you know, you can, giving companies the right to say to not kind of apply certain rules and so forth. I think it has a huge cascade effect in the US, potentially cascade effect everywhere, given the significance of the United States as a cultural driver. So we're going to be there and talking about that. We've got Laurie Ruderman, Lars Schmidt, and Tim Sacker joining us. It's going to be absolutely rock and roll. You can't get those three people, you know, in a room together.
I know.
Brain Food Live, isn't it? So make sure you're there. Thank you to our sponsors, Workable. If you are kind of looking for a new ATS, folks, and you need to upgrade, 14-day free trial with Workable right away. They are an enterprise-ready product. I think any organization from SME onwards could give them a shot. Okay, that's about it. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you all next week. Have a good drink, everyone.
Cheers, cheers.
Cheers. Listen, one really quick thing.
Go on.
That was a really great Brain Food Live, but there was equally as good a Brain Food Live in the chat.
I missed half of it. What was going on?
Just between Jane, Jerry, Alan, and Veronica, loads and loads of great chat. We could have had two parallel shows about the same thing with that lineup.
You know what? I love this show. I thought this topic was really good. And yeah, we should do a round two on it. It's just a real shame for Alan that we couldn't get her on because she has so much to offer us. We'll have to make sure we get her back.
She talked about the book Tribes in the chat, and actually, I wanted to come back to that and mention what she said specifically, but we have too many things to talk about.
Too many things, but I've learned a lot here, actually. I've learned about maybe the gender balancing thing I've got to work on. We've also got I love the concierge idea. Why didn't you share that with me before, man? I mean, that's a really good idea.
Read my 30-point plan for virtual communities.
Come on, mate. As soon as I see any candidate ID branding there, my mind just goes blank, man. This is like, yeah, whatever.
I don't think it is. I don't think it even says that. I think it's probably an old.
Is it pre-candidate ID?
It's a social media search document. Yeah.
Right. Cool. I'll take a look at it. But I didn't know about the. I just didn't even think about it. But yeah, there's certain people that are really positive contributors to it. Maybe I need to do something with that without creating a league table, though, because the league table, as we talked about, is going to just disincentivize other people. So I've got to do this on the stealth as a DM style and see if I can do it like that. Anyway, listen, what are you doing this weekend? Watching football. Celtic lost, didn't they? So holy crap. How many points are you ahead now?
I think six. I don't know, but listen, I've only got one thing on my mind. Usyk Chisora tomorrow night.
Is that tomorrow? Who you got? I got Del Boy for that.
I think Del Boy could do it.
I think he will do it.
He's a massive underdog. Because he's such a massive underdog, I think I'm going to put 50 quid on that.
Yeah, Del Boy is... No, you know what? I've always rated him as a boxer because he's squat and he's a great hooker and he's powerful. He's got knockout punch, but you don't know which Del Boy is going to turn up. Like, he can turn up and be completely flaccid. It's like weird.
No. He is in the best shape he's ever been in. He is absolutely, like, he is in beast mode, and Usyk has never tried to dance around somebody who is going to just keep coming at him with a body that size, and who's just going to eat leather. And he's never been anywhere close to a guy like this.
So Usyk's come up from cruiser, hasn't he? Wasn't he the cruiserweight champ? And he's moved up.
Undisputed.
Yeah, so he's very talented, right? But I think the way Del Boy has to do it is just jump him straight away. Like, for Chisora, it's a two round fight.
He's got to jump him. Absolutely. Yeah. He's got to be absolutely just in his face. He's got to run at him.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, one thing with Del Boy, when he gets angry, he's dirty as well. He's prepared to just get in there and throw some elbows and, you know, headbutts in there.
Did you see the way he finished off Arthur Spilth?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I mean,
that was horrible. Like, I mean, the guy was like, he was just sitting there getting pounded, horrible.
But Simon's right. Usyk might work him out after a few rounds, but I just don't know if he's going to have a few. Del Boy could finish him in three rounds. He's finished the last three rounds in two rounds.
Yeah, this is all about piling in fast. If it goes beyond three, Usyk's got his number because he's just a better boxer. So yeah. Anyway, what's Lee said here?
I've got to go. He's saying we're having a
too much of a feminine conversation. Hey, listen, some of the best fights I've seen are like from women fighters. So it's really getting in there, especially MMA side, actually. But anyway, we'll leave it for now. By the way, Lee, good luck for Tuesday. Good luck. Is it Wednesday, Tuesday? I don't know. But yeah, critical moment. We're going to be doing a Brain Food Live on the election. Adam, I don't know what's happening there. All right, that's it. It's all over. I'll see you.